Welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And what a week we have lined up for you, our fantastic listeners. There was a kerfuffle, a drama that unfolded with the Toronto Catholic District School Board. And we reached out to the executive director of the LGBT Youth Line to get the scoop on what was happening there. Also, we had planned and actually have had an interview now with the incredible Jack Panic of St. Yesterday. Jack Panic has worked not only with bands, but in the music industry, with the Junos. And coming up later in the show, a bit of a discussion about how the lockdown has impacted him and the music industry in Canada. Very exciting chat. Now, Sebastian, you were telling me just before we went on air that you injured yourself by your own cooking. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, you know that I like to experiment with stuff, right? So like yesterday was the second time that I tried a new recipe and I pulled it off this time. It's called pasta alla cecina, where you pan fry pasta until it develops a crust. It's delicious. But anyway, I also made my own mustard because I'm very picky about mustard. I want my hot mustards to attack me, and I don't like Dijon. So I kind of have to make my own because it's hard to find mustards that aren't hot dog mustard or Dijon these days. The colder the mustard is when you prepare it, the hotter it is. So making the hot mustard is not a problem. If you want mild mustard, you have to cook it for a while to get the chemicals in there, the caustic chemicals that make it hot to sort of evaporate off. And so I put a lid on the mustard to get the temperature up, because when you put a lid on, it can build up the pressure. And I go in, take off the lid to give it a stir, and this huge wave of mustard gas just hits me in the face. And my eyes were
really died. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty bad state. And my roommate heard me and she's like, "You okay in there?" And I was like, "Don't go in there, you'll get attacked."
Yeah, death by homemade mustard. I mean, yeah. If you were to go in any particular way, I would put money on your own cooking having caused your death. Yeah.
While it was still warm, we made tater tots and dunked tater tots in the mustard. And it was very good. I was very happy with it. Yeah.
Oh, well, now I'm just hungry. Thank you for that. That's fantastic. Now, one thing I wanted to mention in terms of today's the news that we've seen come out is that there is a subscription box. Now, I like subscription boxes. I think they're cool. You sign up once until your credit card expires, and then you just get a thing in the mail. It's like Christmas once a month, every month. I'm actually signed up to a collective of local farms, and they send me big old box of meat every month. You know,
I thought you were going to say a box of farmland.
There is a subscription company called Popper, P-O-P-P-R. Now, Sebastian, are you familiar with Poppers?
Amyl nitrate. I know about it. I've never partaken myself. I know they exist.
So amyl nitrate it's a blood thinner, I believe. It's a cleaning solution.
It's an organic solvent. It goes through the blood-brain barrier very easily. And it just makes you very lightheaded. In small doses, it's not dangerous, which is why the FDA and like all the other global health organizations are like, please don't, but it's not banned. It's kind of like helium. Like you can die if you huff one helium balloon too many, because it can also go through your bloodstream into your brain. And it's more just that it's thinning out. There's more stuff there that you don't need, and there's less stuff there that you do need, like oxygen. And it's just displacing stuff. I mean, it's more complicated than that, but that's the easy version. It's just large volumes of it are no good for you. But like, just like, you know, huffing a helium balloon. Now and then it's a fun joke, you know?
Now, I do have to correct you, Seb, because in both Canada and the United States, amyl nitrates or alkyl nitrates for the purposes of inhalation are completely banned. It is illegal to purchase chemical poppers for the purposes of inhaling them.
Okay. So
you often find them sold as, leather polish, deodorizers, tape cleaners.
Yeah, vinyl record cleaner, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the kind of things that I'm sure you could use them on that. I have, you know, I've encountered many gentlemen. My partner is fond of poppers. And for me, I was in the room once and I nearly passed out. It's like if you get up too quickly and all the head, you know, blood rushes to your head and you're like, whoa, that happened to me. So clearly I'm not one for this particular brand of enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
And really for people with any kind of heart conditions, it's extremely dangerous. It's not great. Well, this company, Popper, believes that enough people need them regularly that they are now doing a monthly subscription box. And you can get four of them per month. Can you imagine? That's an inordinate amount.
It literally is ordinate. The ordinance is four. Come on. Inordinate means you can't count it. But anyway, I think four a year is probably an okay number. Four a month is, that would make it 12 times higher than you probably should be doing it. And that's just too much amyl nitrate.
You know, I feel like four a month could kill you or dissolve you if you kind of put it into a large container, because it is just, and honestly, the most common reaction across the Twitterverse, gay media, everyone talking about this, is that is such a ridiculous volume.
Yeah.
That unless you're actually using it as a cleaning fluid, no one's ever going to, you know, need that many and live to tell the tale.
I have heard stories. It may be apocryphal, but I've read stories of people who got those, what are they called? I know you have them because I've seen your candle room. Luke, by the way, has an entire room dedicated to storing candles.
No, that's not accurate. We have a furnace room where we also happen to keep candles. The primary object in there is the furnace.
Uh-huh.
There's maybe a dozen candles.
No, there's more than a dozen candles. You have an entire shelving unit covered in candles. But anyway, those like clay pots that you put like a tea light in and you put like the scented oil on top?
Oh, right. Yeah.
I've heard of people like just setting one of those out and putting poppers in there during like a big old orgy. And then somebody had to call the ambulance because everybody passed out. Nobody would wake up again.
Jeez, so, Louise.
I mean, yeah, people get into some weird habits when it comes to these things.
I mean, let's be honest here. There is a reason that Canadian Public Health has banned the commercial sale of these for inhalation purposes. It is dangerous. I mean, but they have a long history in the gay community. Every gay man knows what a popper is. Pretty much every gay man knows what a popper is. Mm-hmm. But it's not something to be messed around with, and certainly not something you need four of every month like that.
No.
In just madness, absolute madness. Speaking of some madness, you came across a story about how folks are being taken advantage of during the pandemic.
Yeah.
More people online.
Yeah. So because a lot of people are staying at home, and this is actually, I've read other related articles on this issue that a lot of people are turning to hookup and dating apps just to meet people to talk to. Because like, for example, Grindr does not market itself as a dating app or as a hookup app. If you look at the literature for it, because I do that kind of thing because I get bored and I'm curious about how they represent themselves. They represent themselves as being a social app. And it turns out this is actually what a lot of people are starting to do now. But anyway, with the spike in the number of people online, there's also been a spike in the number of scam bots that are out there trying to take advantage of people. And so far we have numbers for the US. And in the US, they've found a 20% increase in the number of scam bots online. And in the first quarter of 2020, they had more scam complaints at the fraud department at the federal level than like all of 2019 put together. So, I mean, like it's really picked up and it's across all the platforms. So whether you are L or G or B or T or straight or other or whatever, you're probably on an app where there's people there who are trying to rip you off. So be very careful. Never give out your personal data. Make sure that somebody reacts like a human does before you give them your information.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of those where it's like it's somebody who is obviously very attractive in the profile picture.
Yeah,
definitely just a image pulled from the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And then within a couple of messages, either they've given because it's just an AI. There's nearly always a link that sends you out somewhere that you have to click on.
It's usually an AI. Interpol has broken up sort of, there are places where people sit in front of a computer and type on these things all day as part of like a scam pool. There sometimes there is a human on the other end, but usually the easiest way to test it is to just throw in a non sequitur. So in the middle of a conversation, just say like, I'm pretty hungry. I think I might have a sausage. Do you like sausage? Just something like that, that like the AI is probably not going to pick up on. And if they're just like, what are you talking about? That's enough. The fact that they acknowledge that all of a sudden you're talking about, I don't know, seaweed or snowshoeing or whatever, like the fact that they acknowledge that is, that's enough that it's definitely a human. Even if they're weirded out, like, what are you talking about still?
And I think the AIs are also designed to argue back if you say you're spam, you're a bot.
Yeah, they are.
Like, if they have those keywords where they just like reply, auto-reply, like, I'm not a bot. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's a Turing law against that, but that's beside the point. But yeah, I mean, the big thing for me with this is clearly vulnerable folks or folks who are home, maybe they're alone, maybe they're with family and they just can't get out and network with people because of the lockdowns and COVID, et cetera. We're a lot more, tied up together than we've ever been before. Mm-hmm. And more people are looking for human connection, and these bots are taking advantage of that. And I think it's just cruel.
Mm-hmm. For sure, yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it up. Just as a little heads up that if you've spotted oddness, then you're not the only one. And it's very real. And never give out any information that could be used against you. Like, never. I mean, you shouldn't hand out your credit card or your social insurance number or anything to anyone anyway, for sure. But even your phone number can be used against you. So be hesitant.
If you think you've been impacted by what we're talking about here, these sort of spam bots and frauds, be sure to contact and actually reach out to your local police department. They are certainly able to give you advice and let you know how to proceed with this. A lot of folks never speak up when they've been a victim of fraud. Mm-hmm. And that's how it escalates very often. You find that things have gone too far before they reach out to the police.
Yeah, or they assume somebody else. They assume somebody else has done it. But if everybody assumes somebody else has done it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's jump to our first song. This is Think Electrics with Lonely Love. They're a great band out of Newfoundland, St. John's, Newfoundland. Very excited to see them up on the exchange. And after that, we'll be talking about the Toronto Catholic District School Board's brief decision to remove the LGBT youth line, which was the only LGBT resource listed and linked on their website. And then before the backlash and they reinstated it. Following that, we have James Ayers' Mr. Diamond and the interview with Jack Panic of Saint Yesterday. We'll be back just after this. Thank you. Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith, and I am so thrilled to be joined by the executive director of Youthline. I mean, always a pleasure to chat with you. It's Birgitte Gupta joining us on the line. Like I said, always a pleasure to chat to you. It is unfortunate, the kind of motivation behind this particular conversation.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, Luke. And you know, sometimes negative moments help spark change in movement that's needed for years.
So the reason why I'm bringing this up, the LGBT media, including The Advocate, pinknews.co.uk, picked up the news that the Toronto Catholic School Board, TCDSB, they are one of the largest school boards in the country with 198 schools, a massive number of children who go to these schools, decided to axe the inclusion of your website, LGBT Youthline, from their resources page. Now, this comes off the heel of a deplorable individual who, in an Italian publication, the Canadian-Italian publication, compared your website to snot and porno paraphernalia. I've looked at the website and it is a million miles away from that. It is not even, it just doesn't bear going into detail how ridiculous that statement is. The Toronto School Board, Toronto Catholic District School Board pulled your website. Now, for our listeners who maybe don't know what you do and why this is such a ridiculous scenario to find themselves in, can you quickly explain what it is that Youthline does?
Yeah, of course. So LGBT Youthline is a queer trans two-spirit youth-led organization, and we provide peer support and leadership opportunities to youth across Ontario. So for 25 years, we've been known for our helpline, which trains young people to be able to provide peer support, information, and resources through anonymous mediums of phone, chat, and text. And so we're a pretty reputable organization and have been around for a very long time and are actually one of the only resources of our kind, not just in Ontario, actually, even in most parts of Canada. There isn't an equivalent. I did also want to say, Luke, that since, because we're talking a week later, is that we have met with the school board since, and their statement is that our removal was not due to Joe Volpe's article, and that it was a happenstance that it was around the same time, but it was due to another video sent in December. But they also agree that that video also was using what we would consider homophobic rhetoric to target us.
I mean, it is uncanny timing. If it was unrelated to the article that was issued several hours earlier. And like I said, it was a bit of a storm in a teacup, because I think it was within 3 days, if that, that you had flagged this as an issue and you met with them, I believe. I believe you met with the superintendent and have had a conversation, and now you're back on their website. But really, I think for me, the fact that this debacle happened at all is extremely concerning. Now, Can Queer has, in the 199 episodes of this show that we've done so far, have on many occasions talked about the fragility of LGBT mental health. It is shocking that in the last month alone, the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance System in the States identified LGBT youth as 4 times more likely to suffer from suicide ideation. And that's just one study. There was a British study this month that found that 80% of LGBT youth have been abused online in the last year. And then there was a US study through the Trevor Project a couple of months ago that found that a third of trans folks had attempted suicide, from their respondents. Like, it is astonishing the need and the fragility, the need for support and the fragility of mental health in the LGBT communities, including in Canada. You know, does it concern you that that resource was, at least for a short time, not available?
Yeah, it was extremely concerning. We responded to it within 2 days, and of course we had an outpour. I think it was even more concerning because it was the only Queer Trans Two-Spirit resource available at that time. And so to even if temporarily pull it as a resource due to an attack or a concern, it still felt like the concern was being prioritized over the lack of any supports for youth who already have extreme levels of isolation, and in a pandemic, even more so.
Now, I believe that the LGBT Youth Line works primarily within the province of Ontario.
Yes. So we are funded and have been in Ontario for 25 years, and all of our volunteers and our team are here. We do recognize that there are a lot of provinces and territories that actually have no supports that are equivalent. So as much as possible, we do try to respond to a young person that we know is in a region where they have no supports.
Absolutely. And I think that's so incredibly important. Now, one of the things that's coming out of this, which I think is fantastic, the big concern is what you've identified in terms of a lack of almost any resources at all. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah. So of course, this past week have shown us a lot about the gaps in 2S LGBTQ supports across school systems. And so my team, we use this as an opportunity. And yesterday morning, we did a deep dive into websites across Ontario. And what we found was that only 4 out of 29 Catholic school boards in this province have any form of a 2S LGBTQ resource available. And pretty much all of them only have one, which is us. And so it's brought up this real large gap in understanding that this publicly funded school system doesn't actually have dedicated resources to understand that youth and educators and administrators need adequate resources to know how to support youth, especially in the earlier years when they're questioning their identity and might not know where to go to for support.
Absolutely. I think this is... really, they've shown a light on the fact that you were the only one there. You know, it's sort of, they've inadvertently spotlighted this lack of attention and service. And as an organization that receives tax-funded dollars, you know, it's not unthinkable to assume that they would provide an equitable degree of care that you see in the non-Catholic school board system. Have you found something similar in the non-Catholic school board system, so the public system? Are you listed on those school boards?
So we do find that it's more common that school board systems, public school systems, have sections. So when we did our scan, we also looked at that. And we found that well over half of them had, like, not just us, but had a dedicated 2S LGBTQ resource section of some sort to provide. And we also know that a lot of school boards in Ontario have GSA conferences or other gatherings of sort for 2S LGBTQ youth. So while they still do have a ways to go as well, the gap is nowhere near as large.
Do you think that there's a realization amongst these school boards that they are maybe lacking in that area?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's amazing people in every school board, Catholic or public, that they know that they need to do better to reach youth. I think sometimes that movement is really slow, or people are worried about the like repercussions or backlash, just like the one we saw this last week. And so public pressure or pressure from parents and community members, I think, goes a long way in being like, see, there's public support. We need to do better.
This is something that the Catholic Church has been grappling with for years. It has been an ongoing struggle for the Catholic school system. I think there is definitely elevated questions that all Ontarians need to be asking, not just the Catholic Ontarians, when it comes to it being a publicly funded school board. I think we need to hold a higher standard there. What can our listeners in Ontario, maybe outside of Ontario, do to help you? Like, what can we do about it?
Yeah, of course. So we put out a statement last night, on Thursday night, that actually asks Ontarians and people in general to do better. We need to do better to support our kids and support youth in school systems. We have a report coming out in February that is a youth-led process that is actually giving, I believe, 7 calls to action of how people in power can make spaces better for young people. And so we are doing a lot of work in the coming months to help give those blueprints. But the starting point really is do youth have access to resources like ours? Do they know that they'll be accepted and supported? Are 2S LGBTQ communities being talked about in school spaces and being acknowledged, like, in curriculum, in everyday spaces? Because we know that a lot more educators are supportive and are there, but if you don't express it, a young person doesn't know, because all of our historic and all of our experiences show us that it might be unsafe for us to be who we are.
Absolutely. I think that there is a sort of predominance of silence, you know, a culture of silence that, you know, you need to break through first. Of course, people can find you by Googling you, that, you know, all students are able to work Google.
Absolutely.
And they can find you at youthline.ca if they want to reach out to you. I honestly believe so much in the incredible work that you and your organization does in terms of literally being there for a child that or a young person who needs to make a call, make a text, send a message, and have that support that they may need. What can folks do to help LGBT youthline more broadly?
Yeah, and so our call to actions around that have always been get our word out there. So we actually mail materials out across the province. So we've actually been calling on educators, principals, and also individuals to just order our materials so more youth know about us. Donations obviously always help. We're a very small organization and have been around for a long time. And so knowing that we have dedicated resources and funding to back us allows us to do more work like this. And then the third piece is to just continue the pressure and the support, because so often it's hard to know if we'll have the public outpour like we did this week. And if we know that we'll have the backing of people, it helps us be able to push further for our work. Because really, we just want to make sure that youth know that people are there for them, whether it's us, whether it's their families. And for so many of us, because we're a bi and for a queer and trans organization, we all know what that feeling looks like to be that young person really terrified and uncertain. And it warms my heart that I hear more and more stories of support, but I still know through data and also through everyday personal experience on our lines that we're nowhere close to where we need to be today.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you again. And we'll touch base in February once that report comes out. We'll be jumping to our song, and we will be back with a bit more of the conversation after this.
Can anybody find Mr. Diamond? It's always fun when he comes out for a drink. I'm in need of his light-hearted company. He'll make you laugh when you don't want to think. Can anybody find Mr. Diamond? I heard he went abroad for a year or two, I know. From the Alps to the White Sands of Corsica. But I swear that he came back a while ago. Maybe he's waiting for a private invitation. Maybe he's just not big on goodbyes. Diamond, please. Someone find Mr. D. I've been looking in all the wrong places. I've been looking in other people's faces. I'm gonna have to find a little bit of shine on the inside. Has anybody seen Mr. Diamond? I'm sure not in the mood for one of his little jokes. I recall that the last one was dangerous. There's never fire, but there's always smoke. Has anybody heard from Mr. Diamond? I don't know if by now I should be concerned. He's not known for his sensible behavior. He goes too far, but still he never learns. Maybe I'd better start my own investigation. Maybe I ought to leave him behind. I won't mind if he doesn't remember me. Someone find Mr. Diamond, please. Someone find Mr. D. Thank you.
welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. We have another interview. I am very excited to be joined by Jack Panic. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Yourself?
Not too bad. Now, I believe you're joining us out of Toronto, and you are a musician, an established one. You've been working in the industry in various roles for a while. And I think that's what kind of brings us to our conversation today. Because over the last year, our show and many others have been talking about how, you know, the pandemic has impacted pride parades. And I think we tend to forget a little bit about all of the LGBT folks who are in some of the most hardest hit industries, which is one that really relies on people being within breathing space. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that sort of ties, you know, what I'm looking to you for, because my understanding is pre-pandemic, musicians made most of their income from touring and gigging and merch sales. Is that how you were getting by?
So the industry itself was predominantly based on touring, right? Touring and merchandise. So to remove that is billions of dollars that have just evaporated from what was otherwise a really substantial business. Unfortunately, the days of making a hit album and having that sort of fund your career isn't really viable, right? Streaming's great. I love it. I use Spotify all the time. But the reality is it's not the same industry that it was back in the 80s, back in the 70s, right? So that kind of stuff has really shifted the focus of what musicians have to do, right? At this point, what we're looking at is more of an online format for everything. Merchandise sales are still there with drop shipping, kind of like Amazon. You can still buy your band t-shirts, but I think we're missing sort of an integral part of that, which was the human connection, right? That's kind of what drove the sales. I mean, truth be told, I buy shirts. I don't pay $30 or $35 for a t-shirt. I do it at a concert because it's the human connection part. It's seeing the artist there, talking to them, you know, I'll pay a little extra to support them. It's basically what built the entertainment business, is having the one-on-one human connection. There's something magical about being in a concert setting surrounded by thousands of people who are like-minded, and, you know, you're sharing the same energy in the same space and watching your favorite artist do their thing. That it's something that I think is really difficult to replicate in the current state, right? When you're performing on stage and when the audience is feeding off of that energy you're giving them, I think it's something that's very unique to concerts. And I think it's something that has kept the industry around as long as it has. Yes, I miss it, but I think it's a good opportunity to kind of explore other stuff. Why not, right?
Canada has some incredible LGBT musical talents, and I think we definitely see this country being able to really support and empower them. You know, with this shift to Zoom, not only has the on-stage environment changed, you know, you're not able to feel that energy, see the reactions. How has it impacted sort of the ability to create? You know, if you're suddenly worrying about how am I going to pay my bills, has that impacted your ability to be creative?
You're on an interesting point, because it's really changed the dynamic of, as a musician anyway, you know, if you're doing visual arts or if you're doing different forms of the creatives, I think it all takes kind of a different shape. But speaking on behalf of a musician standpoint, it's changed the dynamic of how you write, how you collaborate with other people. I think a lot of stuff, if you're a career musician, you often find that you do a lot of international work, right? You're traveling all over the place. You know, the beauty of the internet is that it's allowed a lot of flexibility to create with people who otherwise you wouldn't have the ability to meet. But when it comes to actually sitting down with your bandmates and writing a song, I mean, in, you know, Ontario at the moment where we are, it's prevented that entirely, right? Recording studios are closed. No one wants to get within 6 feet of each other. And say, for example, having a gospel choir where your singers are in a room, shoulder to shoulder, singing into a mic, that kind of stuff isn't allowed. So it does change the dynamic. I don't think it affects the creativity. I think writers and creators are always going to create using whatever tools they have. And sometimes, funny enough, the limits, I think, sometimes push a little bit more creativity, if that makes sense. Because you think about it, in the 1920s, when they went through the big influenza, the Spanish flu, they called it, there were creatives at the time. There were musicians, there was songs, and there were poems, and there was a lot of creative art that was created during that time. And this is kind of a parallel to that. So I think, as I said, it's going to benefit us in some ways, because you throw a bunch of creative people in a little room and lock them away for a year, something's going to come out of that. It's not always great. It's not always, from a mental health standpoint, the best situation. But I think as far as art goes, art sometimes needs to have a bit of resistance and a bit of challenge to create the best stuff. If you don't write with conviction and you don't write with what you feel, I feel like you're missing a human element to music or a human element to the creative stuff you're making, right?
I wonder if by all of music sort of moving into the digital realm, whether not the competition for, you know, the equivalent of a digital concert has become that much more difficult. Like, are you able to compete when everyone across the world is also available to pop onto a Zoom call and, mm-hmm. and give a performance? Has that been a challenge, or have you found that folks are focusing on, you know, Canadian or what have you? Like, I'm just curious as to how that's shaken out.
Well, if you look at it, so I'm going to use an example, some work I've done with the Juno Awards out of Toronto here. So they, in the American equivalent, host the Grammys, right? We host the Juno Awards. It's the sort of culmination of a lot of artists' hard work, right? It's honoring the Canadian made talent and the Canadian artists in our country for music specifically. And when it comes to having live performances and having artists do lockdown streams and live streams, early on, they made the decision to move the Junos for 2020 into an entirely virtual performance. So every artist that was scheduled to perform in Saskatchewan at the time was flipped to doing online concerts and live streams. And I think the idea behind the internet and streaming in general is it's allowed anybody, like you said, to be able to jump on and stream, but it's also allowed anybody to connect. So I think it's got a lot of positives. It's got a lot of negatives, but I don't think it's really shifted or changed the way that artists sort of compete any more than it has been even when COVID wasn't a thing. Because with streaming and with the age of computers and the age of the internet, it's already opened that door. You didn't have the ability to jump on a Spotify playlist and just stream through ambient chill beats to relax / study to, right? You could really just kind of let Spotify's algorithm direct you. And what that did is it opened the doors for thousands of new artists to get a platform. Suddenly they wouldn't have had the ability to get into, say, a record store in the, you know, pre-internet age, but now they do. It's in everyone's house. And I think that competition was already there. So it hasn't changed that much, but you think about it, there's a huge market and a huge pie, and there's a piece of that pie for every artist of every persuasion and of every creative genre and style, because wherever there is a person creating a single thing, there's always someone else willing to listen to it. And depending on what you're doing, if you're trying to make a career out of it, or if you are a performer and you're pushing your art out there, you're always going to have listeners.
It seems to have sort of democratized it and made it more accessible, which is kind of exciting. You know, it's interesting because you mentioned Spotify, and we know that the pay for the streams is fractions of a penny. Musicians get a better rate from radio stations. Now, you mentioned the 1920s Spanish influenza, and if I recall, I think Seba was telling me about this, that it was then preceded by almost a five-year orgy, just like people were so thrilled having not died that they were just really excited. Now, I'm not expecting, something similar to take place in 2021 or 2022.
I know for myself, I'm definitely having a five-year orgy as soon as the pandemic is done, 100%. That's already on the calendar for 2022 that's listed.
As soon as breathing on people is permitted, that's all you're going to do.
I'm going to spread my particles everywhere. I can't wait.
But I bring it up because, is there a sense of anticipation in the music industry of 2022, the sort of post-pandemic getting back together? I know that me individually, I am excited about the idea of, well, maybe not being close that someone can breathe on me, but being like outside and going to live events. And, you know, that's something that I've missed. So I'm wondering if there's that sense of anticipation for this sort of post-pandemic world we may eventually get to.
I believe so. I think we've got thousands of concerts that need to be rescheduled. If you think I spent, ironically enough, in 2019, I spent more on concert tickets that year than I think I'd spent my entire life up to that point. And the irony was they were all 2020 concerts. So I've got a stock of stuff that'll be rescheduled to 2021 and 2022. And it's funny because it's kind of like if you've ever ordered something on Amazon or online and you've forgotten about it, and then it shows up in the mail weeks later and you're like, oh, it's like a nice little surprise for yourself from you. I think that's sort of going to be the reaction to a lot of folks who had booked shows at opera houses or concert halls, and they've all sort of been waiting in the wings for the green light to go back to normal. I think it's going to be a big influx of people, but I think we're also going to play catch up for a little bit. So I don't think it's going to oversaturate the market too much, because if you, as much as it might be a big influx of people interested in doing performance and going to, you know, in-person events again, I think we're going to see a lot more of a gradual rollout just because of the logistics, right? There's only so many seats available. I think there's a lot of stuff that's going to need to be rebooked before new stuff can take place. But I think we're also going to see the continuation of a lot of the online stuff. And I think that's going to be a lot of what we're going to see.
Is Saint Yesterday, the band that you're with, do they have plans post-COVID in terms of getting out there?
Yeah, we've got an album that's been in the works for a while.
Excellent. Well, once you have the album ready, send it over our way, and we'll see if we can give it a spin on Cancria. Sure. I want to thank you so much for chatting with me and giving a sense of how reality may have changed a little for musicians. I think this has been a very helpful insight.
I think there's a lot of good and a lot of negative, and you just have to appreciate that particular moment that you have. There's always a silver lining. There's always something that can be done. And, you know, as I said, take care of the mental health. You know, people are locked up at home a lot of the time, but it doesn't mean that you have to isolate yourself mentally as well. You know, use that opportunity to get through the backlog of books that you haven't read, or, you know, video games you haven't played, pick up an instrument if you've never played before. All these things that you thought about doing that you were otherwise too busy in your day to day. I think it's a perfect opportunity to kind of, you know, try something new.
Absolutely. Make use of that silver lining. For folks who may want to be trying to find the music that you make, where can they find that?
Just Saint Yesterday, at Saint Yesterday. It's everywhere. That's ST.yesterday. And I'm just Jack Panic, the Jack Panic on pretty well everything. But yeah.
Hello and welcome back to Cancria. That was a fantastic interview that, I'm biased because I did the interview with Jack Panic of Saint Yesterday. Right at the end of the show, in a few minutes, we'll be playing out with their track Falling. Before we go, though, I just wanted to assure everyone who may have heard the messages of the ultra-Orthodox Jewish rabbi.
Yeah.
Who seems to have insisted, according to the Israel Hayom, that is Rabbi Daniel Asser, that the vaccine, because it includes embryonic substrate, according to him,
yes,
it will cause opposite tendencies.
Yes.
Now, it's worth noting that Prime Minister Netanyahu, who is the Prime Minister of Israel, so far is not doing really anything opposite to what they have been doing before. And none of the other thousands and tens of thousands of people vaccinated in Israel have suddenly began doing the opposite things of what they were doing before. But this particular rabbi, who clearly has medical knowledge, seems to claim that embryonic substrate, according to only him, can cause opposite tendencies. Are you worried about this, Sebastian?
Well, I mean, the bit of context here is that he connected I hesitate to say the dots, but he connected the something, and then later on said that the vaccine will make you gay. But then it makes me think, if I get the vaccine, will it make me straight?
Oh, dear.
And if it does, shouldn't he be celebrating that? Shouldn't he be like, let's give the vaccine to the gays first and see if they'll become straight? And then maybe that'll do something. I don't know. I think he hasn't thought this through, to put it very gently.
No, he really hasn't. I mean, we're obviously a bit flippant about it. I mean, obviously it doesn't cause you to suddenly be the opposite of what you are. That's just, I mean, it's sheer tomfoolery, the idea. I couldn't find the word that was appropriate there. I mean, but it's a concerning piece of information, the fact that this is something that's being espoused and put out there. The Israeli Health Ministry has actually also warned that the ultra-Orthodox community in Israel is getting significant spikes of COVID infections.
Yeah. And generally speaking, like, there's a lot of good science that comes out of Israel. So it is not a ultra-conservative, science-hating, denialist country by any means. We're talking about communities that listen to their leaders very closely. And over the past, I'm not going to give a period of time, but over the recent history, there have been some peculiar people in positions of community leadership. And as a result, the community has gone in peculiar directions. This definitely should not reflect the Jewish community as a whole. I like to hope.
Not even the state of Israel. I mean, let's be honest here. Israel is currently way out ahead in terms of its vaccination rate. There is a significant percentage of the population in Israel who have received the vaccine, and you know, that's lives saved. It's fantastic. It is not going to turn you gay as part of a massive scheme funded by Bill Gates to microchip and abduct children in a shadow government. It's not that. It's weirdly specific. Well, it's one of the, I'm just reading one of the things that he has espoused. I'm like, well, it's not that. Why Bill Gates? With great confidence. Well, I don't even know. It's either him, the Freemasons, or the Illuminati. It's one of those three.
What does Bill Gates want with your kids?
Or with the Illuminati? I don't know. I mean, these are things we may never know. But let's move on to some...
I mean, let's just be very clear here. If Bill Gates wanted a ton of kids, he's a millionaire. He could just clone them in his magic millionaire vats. Obviously. Though that's where he grows his own spare organs. Clearly, he doesn't need your kids. He'll just grow his own. Like, this whole thing is nuts. I love it.
Yeah, I think just for clarity here, you were being satirical there, and we were being critical of this just nonsense statement from the ultra-Orthodox rabbi in Israel. Now, before we go, I want to mention that we were keeping an eye on the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. Now, in Australia, being the opposite ends of the earth from where we are, they tend to have their Mardi Gras in sort of January, February, which is the height of their summer.
Yes.
They were hoping to have a whole bunch of in-person events, and a lot of them have actually had to be cancelled on accounts of the COVID cases in and around Sydney. So yeah, it is unfortunate. They've cancelled a lot of their proms and all of their in-person events. They've now copied what they did last year because they were one of the first to respond to this. And they're actually having the parade in a cricket ground where these socially distanced floats will move through the ground, and people who are socially distanced in the stands will see and cheer and wave and so on. They're doing their Mardi Gras parade socially distanced, and they've pivoted a lot of their events to be online events. But yeah, it is interesting in the 2021 year. Is this a path forward for prides coming up in the summer? What do you think?
This is a pretty big hard reboot. And I think a lot of things are not going to look like they used to when they finally do come back. I remember we talked about this back in the summer, that this may actually be the end of the sort of cynical corporate side of pride. At least for the foreseeable future, because a lot of places are going to be busy in financial recovery and they're not going to be, let's say, invading pride spaces. So for sure, they're going to look different, for sure. And I think next year, we're probably going to see a lot more of that, because the prides in Canada happened early enough in the lockdown process that that's sort of like a collective creativity of the whole world thinking together about how to get over it. Hadn't quite started up yet. So there were a few places, like Emo, I think, had a distance parade.
They did a drive-through unsanctioned parade.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were some creative things like that. I mean, we could also reverse it, right? Where you could have, like, you have people who are stationary and then you walk a path. So it's like the audience walks the parade and everybody else sets up a thing, because then you can control the environment a little bit better. I don't know, maybe some kind of reverse situation. But yeah, it's definitely going to be different. We're going to be seeing some very, very different things next year.
I really like that idea of like a big old gay trail where you have to like follow the, you know, the red, yellow brick road, and it's all the, you know, stationary floats. I think that's a fantastic idea, and I think could allow for a lot more customization. So yeah, any pride organizers out there listening, we call dibs on being acknowledged for the yellow brick road idea for potential, you know, make the audience move. All about that. All right, we have run out of time. Thank you everybody for tuning in and listening to this week, either on the radio or via our podcast. Don't forget, we will be back next week as per usual. Next week, actually, we will have a special show looking at the impact of not just the Trump camp administration, but also the hopes and dreams under the Biden administration. We have three interviews with various Americans, gay Americans all across the U.S. who are going to be responding and letting us know what they think of that change from one to the other. Both Democrats and Republicans will be joining us, so don't forget to miss that. And in a couple of weeks, we will be celebrating our 200th episode, also definitely something to look forward to. And we're playing out with Sing Yesterday's Falling. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian, and thank you very much for listening.